listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats. Today we are going to be talking about how we would tackle building a modern web app. Front end, back end, CSS, images, all that stuff. We got a question from Michael Gunnifelson. And he said, I would like to suggest a Syntax episode. How would you implement a simple version of a website like Reddit, Twitter, or Airbnb, including the back end, the front end, data model, all kinds of interesting stuff there. And I thought that would be kind of a cool episode. So like if we were in a startup and we had the sort of idea of one of these apps, what tech would we choose? And how would we tackle? This is absolutely not like a final word on this type of stuff, like certainly much smarter people than us. But if Scott or I, just regular developers, were to try tackle one of these things, how would we do it? Today, we are sponsored by Netlify and Sanity. Netlify is going to, you can make it easy to deploy your websites. And Sanity is a structured content CMS for sort of like a back end for your front end. That could be hosted on Netlify. Actually, that's perfect sponsors that go to well together today. With me today, Mr. Scott Tolinsky. How you doing?
Hey, doing good. I'm very tired. As a parent, I feel like this is going to be the intro to like every episode for the little while.
Yeah.
It's like how I'm tired. I'm caffeinated. I'm doing good. I'm working on a Svelte course right now. I've been recording it for the past couple weeks here.
Yeah.
And I love Svelte, man. I just want to do everything in that now. There's so many cool little things about it that we didn't even get into in that episode. Like,
yeah,
the fact that there's like a built-in physics-based animation and transitions library built into it. And it's awesome. Ooh. And super easy. That context stuff is super easy and awesome. Man, there's so many cool things about it. And I feel like you know, that the person is always bouncing back and forth between new stuff. This thing seems new and nice enough that like, I just want to use it.
So rewrite your entire platform in it.
I know, I can't. I did find something that allows you to write Svelte components in React, and I have no idea how good of an idea that is. I'm going to guess it's probably not a great idea for me to even try to do, but man, I just really like using it, and I'm excited to do more with it. So if you're interested in it, check out more. There's lots of stuff about it, and I'm going to hold back. I'm not going to say that I'm going to use Svelte for this because I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm still pretty new to it myself. But yeah, I think this is going to be a really interesting episode for our listeners.
So let's get into it. There are certainly some situations in here that we will just say, like, I don't know what I would choose for that because it's not something I've totally run into. But let's get going. We'll start with the back end. What would you choose for that? For me, I probably would choose a Node backend, which is because that's probably by far my most comfortable language. And I think that it would work well, especially because I think if you're building something that you hope to scale this big, you definitely do want to be writing it in something that can be easily transitioned or even initially written in these things that can be done in serverless functions. And I think Node is a really good fit for something like that. In terms of a backend framework, I would certainly probably initially reach for something like Express, but I probably would also take the time to evaluate what a serverless framework would do for me in that case, just because of how cheap it would be to host and how easy it is to scale, something like that. What about you?
Yeah, and I'd probably go there as well, specifically because you're going to find a lot, like if you decide to do it with Node, you're going to probably find the most available developers in Express. And so if you're thinking about growing this thing or you know, having it be more than just a one person development flow, you're not going to want to put yourself on something that no one's ever heard of and that everyone has to learn the moment that they get into your thing, because then you're going to spend so much money and time training people on something that is like, oh, hey, this obscure Node framework that nobody uses. Good luck. Now you have to go learn all the documentation, but there's enough people using Express and using Node that you're most likely going to be able to find the developers out there who have those skills to be able to make this vision a little bit more. So I would probably go in the same, especially because that's what I know and I'm most familiar with. I've built stuff in Ruby on Rails, stuff in Django before, and to be entirely honest, I'm just way more comfortable in Node than I am either of those. So
totally. In terms of an API, I would certainly go GraphQL from the get-go on something like that. It's a perfect fit for it. I don't think that I would reach for one of these off-the-shelf, done-for-you GraphQL products right now, just because there's a lot changing in the space right now, and I don't think that anyone has absolutely nailed it just yet. So I would probably just sort of roll my own out of the gate. And what that allows you to do is that you do have control over the raw database and all the resolvers, should you ever need to move to something else. Because I think it's not impossible, but it is sort of difficult when you buy into something a little bit too early, and then you have to switch over to it.
Yeah. And it's not that hard. Well, it's not as hard as you might think, because I've run my own Apollo Server GraphQL API with, I guess it is with Express, even though it's on Meteor right now. The API part of it is done through Express, so it's really not that intense or anything. If you're scared about it, you're nervous about it. If you can do basic database queries, you can write a basic Express route. You can get your own GraphQL server up and running in not that much time. So I would reach for GraphQL too, just because I like it. And the next one is database. You know, people are going to be mad because I'm going to say MongoDB, and I'm not going to say MongoDB because it's the right option. I'm going to say MongoDB because I know how to use it well. And so while a relational database might be fine, I mean, it depends. Okay. Am I building this to be Airbnb like one day, or am I building this as just a project? Because if I'm building this to be, you know, an absolutely massive thing, I don't know, I might look into a more appropriate database, one that's more relational based.
Yeah. I don't know if you need to think about scale that early on, right? Like those are good problems to have. If you're having trouble scaling, then obviously you can work on it. But I think a lot of times people spend way too much too early on worrying about scale versus other things like developer experience, user experience, whatnot.
Yeah. So, I mean, I personally would reach for Mongo just because, again, it's the database technology that I have the most experience with. And therefore, it's the one I'm going to be able to work the best in, other than maybe like MySQL. And like, but most of my MySQL stuff has been done with PHP anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would probably, like, again, Mongo is my own database. I've been very happy with it, but I've certainly seen a lot of people have growing pains with that. And I've never heard anyone complain about choosing Postgres. So I don't really have all that much experience in it, but I have looked at some of the adapters. There's packages out there that allow you to write your queries like you do in Mongoose or MongoDB, which is pretty cool. So I would probably reach for something like that, like a Postgres or a MySQL, just because they're tried and tested. They work well, they scale well. And I haven't really heard a whole lot of people being like, we chose Postgres on this and it's the worst, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I would probably, if there was like time in the project to say, oh, hey, you can go get very comfortable with the database technology, I would probably pick Postgres too, just for those specific reasons. And I have a little bit of experience in Postgres because that's what I used when I did Rails and Django, but I'm not like great at it. So,
yeah. Also, like, we're probably far from database experts in this situation.
Yes, definitively.
We get a lot of requests for people like, why don't you come on and like, why don't you do an entire episode explaining all the different databases and the pros and cons? I'm like, well, we actually don't know that at all. Which is funny because I think that there's a whole, I don't know, cross section of developers where you don't ever like you could probably pick any database and never have any trouble with any of them. But it's when you start getting into real big scale. And cause I think of something like Drip or ConvertKit, where they track every single event and they have like billions and billions of rows in their databases. And they have huge growing pains over that because it's just so much data, and being having to be able to scale that thing up is really, really difficult. And that's just something I've never had to encounter myself.
Totally. Yeah. Right. Because as large as my platform gets, it's never probably going to be that large. So it's not even something that I need to personally even really think about. If my platform does get that large, I'm going to hire somebody to take care of it. Somebody who's an expert. So
yeah, that's a great problem to have if you are running into scaling issues like that. Then we had data model as a question in here. I don't really know. I guess we kind of answered that with GraphQL and whatnot. I don't know how I would probably create a new content type for every content type on the website. So if it's Airbnb, you'd have your user, you'd have your listings, and then you might have some like relationships between those two. And you'd obviously have a lot more. You might have like a messages data model, and those are relational to that. So I guess that's, I think, how everybody would sort of tackle that, though.
Right. And even with GraphQL style database or GraphQL style APIs, too, it's really easy to write those relational queries anyways. And so I would just make everything relational, even though I said use MongoDB.
You still can. I've got lots of relational stuff in mine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, likewise. Yeah.
What about like real time? This is a question. Is like, would you go real time right out the door? We certainly remember that app we use for our live syntax, Pigeonhole.
Yes, Pigeonhole.
The whole thing is built on, I think, GraphQL subscriptions. It's all immediate. Every time you hit save, it all immediately updates. The whole thing is built real time out of the gate.
Yeah, Level Up was real time out of the gate with Meteor for a long time until I just realized I wasn't using a ton of those features. So yes, it was cool to be able to push updates and have it just pop in there for the people who are currently using it without even refreshing the page or any of that stuff. Yeah. Or be able to, that was actually might have been the coolest part, is that I could change the data and it would get pushed to the users immediately without them having to do any sort of refresh. But to be honest, I was not using those features. And it's the main reason I'm moving off of Meteor right now, is that I'm just not taking advantage of that stuff. So I probably wouldn't go real time unless it was like absolutely necessary. And, you know, like Reddit's adding chat or whatever. Every app adds chat eventually. That's the joke, is that, you know, your app just keeps growing until you have to add a chat to the app, which,
yeah,
think about every single app that you have has probably added chat to it at some point. So I wouldn't go real time unless I absolutely needed those features or until I needed to, because I spent a long time working around that stuff and I really enjoyed the features that I had when I had them. But once it came time to, you know, work around them, it was a little frustrating to, you know, have that be sort of the default.
Yeah, I think I would go with something like, I would think early on, is the framework I'm using have the ability to go real time? Like, is it as easy as just flipping a real time switch and changing over to a GraphQL subscription? Or is that going to be more difficult? Like, I was actually looking the other day. This Feathers.js is now version 4.
Feathers came out of Meteor, I think. I don't think it came directly out of Meteor, but I think some of the ideas did. I know a bunch of people in the Meteor community talked about Feathers when it first dropped.
Yeah, I remember I was doing like some WebSocket demos, and somebody from the Feathers team sent me David Lewick. I probably mispronounce that as I do everything, but he like created the equivalent in like a kind of Express and Feathers. And I thought that was pretty nifty. I think it uses MongoDB under the hood as well. So I'm similar to Scott. I probably make sure I can go real time should I need to. But for a lot of these things, maybe Twitter would be helpful to go real time. Airbnb, probably not. Reddit, maybe.
But even Twitter isn't going to be real time because they're like collecting. The tweets aren't just going to pop in there, right? They're going to collect and say, all right, there's been 15 new tweets since, you know, so you would think that would more benefit to like this batched sort of like every X amount of time we're batching to look for something rather than having the thing pop in there in real time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think TweetDeck uses streaming. And I think that that's kind of interesting because like Twitter itself, like the API is not. But if you need to build an app that is a different experience like TweetDeck, then you can reach for the streaming API. So again, I probably make sure I could do it if I need to.
Totally.
So I guess that would be the back end of what I would choose for there. We didn't obviously didn't talk about any templating or anything like that, because I probably, and I would do it all as not necessarily a single page app, but I would use some sort of JavaScript framework to build the entire thing. So I would reach for React and Next.js. So a perfect use case for something like Next.js is a server and client rendered React.js application. So it comes with a router built in. You don't have to worry about picking that. It does server rendering for you. You don't have to worry about that. Next.js just comes batteries included with a lot of the stuff that you'd need for a web app like that.
Yeah. You know, I'm currently moving my platform to Next.js 9. And it's funny because I'm moving my API to their API routes, which has been really super cool. And this might be a nice little option too if you were looking for sort of serverless style, because you can build each of your API endpoints as a single route within Next.js now. And it's really nice. I have my entire GraphQL Apollo database coming in on one Next.js route, essentially. And it's really cool. I really like it. So I would probably use Next too. I'm really enjoying using Next. And, you know, if you don't want the entire thing to be server-side rendered, maybe you just want the template to be server-side rendered and maybe some other information you don't want to for whatever reason, you can take control over exactly what becomes server-side rendered at that point. So you could server render your entire application. You could do just little bits here and there. You could do just none of it at all if you really wanted it that way. But I would personally have the whole thing be server-side rendered. I would use React to do so. I would do so with Next.js, and I would use their API routes most likely.
Yeah, as sort of an aside, I can't wait for Suspense to land, because like, even though like Next.js does server-side rendering, it's still hard because you have to, like, at a page level, you have to know any components that are loading data and you have to wait for them. And that's a weird dance to do when you're loading that data. So I can't wait for Suspense to come out and make that stuff a lot easier.
Yeah, and it's hard. Now that I'm moving to Next, it has been easier than what my own custom one was, because for my own custom one, I had to really, really take control of my own code splitting stuff. I had to take care of my own, all of my own Apollo code splitting, React server-side rendering stuff, to the point where it was really difficult to troubleshoot all the time. Things were hydrating oddly. And Next.js definitely has just sort of standard ways that they have to do things. There's a large community of people that use it. And the best part about Next, in my mind, is their examples folder, which shows you examples of just about every single thing you could ever possibly want to do with Next. So I'm a big fan of that. We had in here for routers, libraries, again, since we're both talking about using Next, that's built into the platform. Otherwise, I would use React Router, which is what I've always used. And if you're using React, React Router is pretty much the only choice right now.
Yeah, Reach Router is being folded back into React Router.
Yeah, right. So before you say, oh, I want to try something new here. Yeah, no, I think it's React Router or Next.js or Gatsby, one of those platforms that has the router built in. As far as CSS, I would personally use styled components. And here's why. Because I have my entire component library that I've built upon freelance projects, my own sites, client sites, whatever. I've built up my own CSS and JS sort of library for my own personal use. I know how to use it. It's sort of like a component library, but you know, the best code is the code you wrote. So I'm very familiar with it.
Yeah.
And I know exactly how to make anything happen with my own design system. Also, my design system's largely based right now in CSS custom properties, and I love it. I'm going to, you know, absolutely love that. So
yeah, I would also go with some sort of CSS and JS platform, just because I love how when you stop using a component, then that CSS is immediately dropped from the build. And I love how you can easily generate critical CSS from, like, when your JavaScript framework knows about the CSS, doing those performance things are so much easier. Like I did a little poll in my Gatsby workshop last weekend. I was like, what are people using? And of the people that were using CSS and JS, it was all over the place. Some people were in motion, some people mm-hmm. style components, a couple people stuff I had never heard of. So, but I think I would pick something like probably style components or emotion where the CSS that you write is as close to regular CSS as possible, because should you ever need to move to something else, it's not going to be a huge chore to move that thing from one to another.
Yeah, that's actually a huge reason why I don't write my CSS in object format inside of JavaScript, yeah. even though I'm doing CSS and JS, because it's like, if I need to copy and paste that, move it out of somewhere, that would be a huge project to move it into objects. Another reason I don't use the CSS and JS from Next.js myself personally is because I think that ties it a little bit too closely to the platform. I mean, I think you can probably use, what is it, Style.jsx? Is that what they use?
Yeah, that they use a package called Style.jsx where you just pop a style tag
yeah.
anywhere inside of your thing. And that's actually, as close as you can possibly get to writing CSS. But I've never liked that as well.
I don't know why I don't like it. I just don't. I'm sorry. So I'm probably going to keep it with styled components myself as well.
That's fine.
And the next thing we're going to get into is deployment process. But before we get into there, let's talk about deploying an application and just how easy it can be with Netlify. Now, Netlify is one of those services that allows you to host your application just so insanely easy and have all of these features that have been typically very difficult to get set up. For instance, you get continuous integration out of the box where Netlify just builds your site automatically, you push to a repo, and Netlify says, no worries, I got it. You can do A-B testing. You can get a free SSL certificate that is, you know what? Sometimes they just say, oh yeah, you can get a free SSL certificate with this thing. And then you still have to go through the entire process of setting up an SSL certificate. But now with Netlify, no, you don't do anything. That's the single best part about Netlify. You don't do anything to get the SSL set up. It just is set up and it just works, which is really, you should just be Netlify's tagline in my mind is it just works. Every single person who is on the Twitter will say, dang, Syntax is not lying. Netlify just works and is absolutely incredible. So you're going to want to head over to netlify.com/syntax and you're going to want to see all of the amazing features. So many of them that we didn't even get to talk to, like serverless functions, identity, a free global CDN and all sorts of cool stuff. So netlify.com/syntax, sign up today, push a repo up there in about 2 seconds and see why we go nuts for it over here.
Awesome. It's funny, I'm just doing a little bit of research on our next sponsor, Reed, which is Sanity. And at my workshop, I had a couple of questions about how do you redeploy to Netlify when your CMS changes? And I was like, that's perfect. Perfect little ad read for the next one. So stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned for the ad read.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. So next up we have is like a deployment. So you built your back end, you built your front end. Where do you put this thing that has probably a node? It seems like we've chosen the same things together. You've got a node back end with some sort of GraphQL API, and you have a front end in React, you want to deploy this thing. What would your deployment process look like? Are you using one server, two servers? Are you using services?
Yeah, well, if we're doing Next.js, I'm going to deploy on Now. And Now 2 is really super cool because you have different containers for, and my understanding is you have different containers for every route. Is that your understanding as well?
Yeah, well, so if you're deploying your backend to Now, the whole idea is that you can ideally write your app in kind of the way that you've always written it, and then it will automatically serverless it for you, which is great because then you don't have to like worry about serverlessing it yourself. But like posting just a regular node app to Now is very hard to do because they want you to modify it a little bit in the routes so that it will deploy it for you, which is great because like, if you're going serverless first, then you don't have to really worry about the serverless frameworks and all that stuff. You just kind of build your app.
Yeah. If you're doing a GraphQL backend, then for me, I didn't have to modify mine at all because, well, I had to write one file, but API routes are just basically a folder with an API that gets one single API route. And if you have a GraphQL API, you only need one API endpoint anyway. So I have one folder that is my quote unquote serverless function or whatever. It's my entry. Mm-hmm. It's my endpoint to my GraphQL API. But the entirety of the rest of my API, which is fairly large, is just loaded through that one page the exact same way it was when I was doing everything on Express anyway. So
yeah,
that aspect really didn't change very much for me.
Yeah, if you can write it. Deployment process for me, I'm not sure, actually. I'm kind of like, right now, I'm moving over my own platform to Now, which is good because like it does a lot of heavy lifting for you. It's fairly affordable for what it does for you, which is great. I'm just trying to think, like, there's so many different options that I've been going through right now, and I haven't really given them all a heavy look into.
Yep.
So I think I would certainly like to try to do it all in one go, meaning that like you can deploy it to the one app. It handles your back end and your front end. It will handle scaling, auto scaling. And that's kind of that's what Now is trying to do for you. Something like that. But you certainly could go another option too, where you host your front end somewhere and back end somewhere else.
So that's kind of interesting. So I've had my site's been in Meteor for a long time personally, and I have always had that one push deploy does everything. So for me, that's the way it's been for the past however many years, right? 4 or 5 years that my site's been on Meteor. So I'm so used to that I would have to have that. The last thing I want to do is manage two different deploy processes or be able to like have to worry about whether or not the API went out first before the front end deploy completed or even containers. I've hosted my site that's had that sort of deploy process on DigitalOcean, on my own custom droplet, on Heroku, on now Meteor Galaxy. And Meteor Galaxy is the most expensive, but it's also the most turnkey. I don't have to worry about it. And scaling up containers is really easily. So that's, you know, something that would be very important for me and one of the reasons why I would pick Now, but also Heroku or any of these options where scaling is easy. If I'm building this as a one person or a small team, I don't want to have to go ahead and hire a system administrator right off the bat. I don't want to have to hire anybody to worry about that. I want to be able to, hey, just scale it up really quickly if I need to, or have that addressed based on these needs that you have at the time. And again, once the application is either making money or it has the traction, you can then go ahead and build into a bit more of a managed one to save some money in that regard.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, we probably say it quickly. It's now.sh. If you want to check out the website for that, I know we'll get some emails about it. Like love tutorials. Somebody thought Scott was saying love tutorials for like an entire year.
Yes. Now.
Another question we had here was, what would you do for data on your front end, right?
Yeah.
I would probably do it in either Apollo, if it's all GraphQL, and then stuff that doesn't need to be in Apollo, I would use context and state to be able to just throw that stuff in state. I don't think that I would reach for like a state management like Redux or something like that. I think I would try to keep it all in Apollo or in state.
Yeah. We're pretty much just describe like here's the platform that I'm working on right now. These are like this is pretty much it.
Well, I think the stuff I'm doing is the best, like my best opinions, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so I'd probably do the same thing. I'm using Apollo for my stuff. I like Apollo for my GraphQL stuff. And again, I like context. Now, it's not overdone. You know, you miss out on some of those really nice dev tools. But if you're not doing your data loading within Redux anyways, then you're missing out on a lot of that stuff anyway. So I would probably just use context straight up. Dataflow. Yeah, I mean, I don't like to keep my components too tightly coupled, so I would make use of context somewhat frequently, and, you know, obviously if something's not being reused, parent-child relationships, all that stuff that you're typically used to with a React site.
Email. Sending transactional email is a big part of the app. You book something, you tweet something, you get a DM, you have to send one-off emails for that type of thing. We have an entire show on sending email and what the different ones are. So you can go ahead and listen to that. That is episode 32 is designing, templating, inlining, and sending email. So check out that episode if you want to hear more about sending transactional email. I would reach for probably something like a React-based email templater. And the one that we talked about before, what's the name of that one?
Oh, MJML?
MJML, which allows you to like write emails with things like column and image and
it's so good.
Row. So currently I don't do this. I write my emails in GPUG and then I template them out. But I would probably, because the entire site would be in React, why not do your emails in React as well? They obviously don't get, I think some confusion is like React is not going to run in your email client. It will just at the end of the day, kick it out to HTML for you. There's a CSS inliner I've used in the past called Juice. And then that will allow you to write your CSS in such a way, like style tags. And then it'll inline all the CSS for you. So it'll put it as style attribute for that. I think that's, I use something called Inky right now.
Yeah, that's from Foundation, right?
From Zurb.
Yeah.
And Inky is sort of the same idea as MJML, where you just write your own components, like row and column and image and things like that. And then it will convert it to the table equivalent. Because like whatever you choose, you certainly should not be writing tables yourself. And you certainly should not be inlining the CSS yourself. Those problems have been solved.
Yeah.
And that's an awful thing to do with your life.
Yes. That was one of my first gigs at my first agency job, was just like only doing HTML emails. And it was just like, oh, this sucks. MJML is so good. That's what I would use, because it allows you to write this stuff in React and not have to think about it too much and just have it output and inline all that stuff right there for you. So you could, again, get to use the tools and stuff that you're most used to. I personally really like it. I find it to be very, very useful, especially if you are already a React developer.
For sending it on the server side, I use NodeMailer, and I would still use that. I love NodeMailer. It's fantastic. And then I use Postmark. You actually need someone to send the emails for you.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you choose, use someone that will support SMTP. So you just use a standard. And that way, if you ever need to change mailers, then you can quickly change over your credentials and you'll be able to keep sending email. So I personally use Postmark. I absolutely love it. But there's certainly like there's Mailjet, which made MGML. You could use them. There's what other? What do you use, Scott?
I use Mandrill.
Mandrill. Okay.
And I've been on it since it was free, and then I just have not moved off of it. I probably should move off of it because they goof with your URLs, and I'm not super interested in that. Yeah.
Yeah. You can turn that off, but that allows you to like track clicks and things like that. I think I have that turned on. No, I have it turned off with Postmark. Postmark will do that as well.
Yeah. But ever since, I don't know, there's this weird divide between Mandrill and MailChimp, where like everything in Mandrill looks like it was made 20 years ago and everything in MailChimp looks brand new. So I like really hate messing with Mandrill at all.
Yeah, I think that what happened is that they were kind of bullish on this whole company, and it was free and it worked forever and I was using it for everything. And then they pulled the rug from everybody and said like, oh no, you have to start, you have to pay now. And otherwise are free. And I think because they have huge issues with spam and putting resources towards that thing. Like, I think that's why the best companies that do this stuff are companies that just do that stuff. And it's not like a side hustle that the email company is trying to do. So I probably wouldn't go for Mandrill. I know that you probably wouldn't recommend that either.
Yeah, I wouldn't use it, but I would opt to do research.
Yeah. Yeah. I also probably another tip here is get approved and sign up and get everything working with two.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Because if something goes wrong with one of them, you need to switch quick, and you should ideally even have like a rollover coded into your system so that if one of them goes down or for some reason you get blocked by one of them, you can quickly fall over to another one. Users, authentication, things like that. What would you use? Would you hand roll something like a user system? Would you use something built in? What do you think?
I'm dealing with this right now. I would not hand roll something. I'm hand rolling mine right now, and I'm just, there's so many pieces to it. There's so many things that my non-hand rolled one did for me. And now that I'm having to hand roll, I'm like, oh, I got to worry about this email. I got to worry about this part of the account set up. And it's just kind of a pain in the butt. So I would roll with something that is pre-made, whether that's just like Passport, which is just a package, you know, or an actual service like Auth0. I'm not quite sure. I would probably roll with something like Passport because there's a huge community of people using it. I'm not sure. I'm using something right now called accounts-js, which is an Apollo Mongo. Well, you can use all sorts of stuff with it, but it's not a huge package. And it's done by a bunch of former Meteor devs who wanted to sort of bring the Meteor experience back to Apollo. And it's just not there yet. It's pretty cool. But there are, you know, I'm not turnkey, and it's certainly not as easy as something like Passport. So, you know, I would probably go with something like Passport.
I too would probably reach for Passport.js. It's such a hard thing to roll your own. And even using something like a Passport.js, it's still hard to build your own user system like that. There's a lot of heavy lifting you have to do yourself. You got to worry about avatars and user permissions, all that kind of stuff. You could certainly go with a solution like Auth0 is probably the biggest one available out there. Just know that like it gets expensive really quickly. These types of things where you're like, oh, it's so easy, and I use like services to do almost everything. And I certainly would reach for services in some situations, but like I'm just running the calculator on like what mine would be at, like, I don't know, 50,000 people a month watching courses is $1,200 a month. Like that gets expensive real quick, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's hard. Maybe I would just go with something like that. And then as it gets more expensive, then move it over. I don't know. It's hard to say.
It is hard to say because there's so many of these little services that you could just be adding here that are going to make your life a ton easier. And the next thing you know, your bill a month is way, way too much. And, you know, the company might go under. So there is some, you know, there's definitely some considerations, cost versus time that we're not exactly considering in this. So cost first time, if you want to be saving a bunch of time and you want to not spend a whole lot, you're going to want to head to Sanity at sanity.io and check out what they have going on there for a whole backend solution. And let's talk about saving you a whole bunch of time with more about Sanity is Wes.
Yeah. So Sanity is a structured content CMS, which is kind of a cool way to say you can log in, you can create all of your content types, you can do all of your relations, you can actually create your own custom React.js components and pop them into the editor. And then at the end of the day, that will kick out an API for you to consume in your front end or for your back end, which is pretty nifty. One cool thing I want to sort of like say about Sanity is that like I was teaching a workshop on Gatsby. And we were saying like, okay, like what are your options for headless if you want to like build a Gatsby website? Like where can your content come from? And one of the options is Sanity. And they have this really cool thing where it will update in real time because somebody asked like, okay, cool. But like if my client changes content, like it has to rebuild, right? And then I have to go manually rebuild it. So there's kind of two things I got out of that is first, Sanity has a plugin that will show you real-time updates in Gatsby so that you can have that real-time feedback where the client updates the content and they can look at your like staging site and immediately see what it looks like. And then second, there Sanity has like web hooks. So you can hook up Sanity to something like Netlify and you say, when the content changes on Sanity, immediately trigger a build on Netlify. So you, the developer, don't need to sit around and always be pushing new builds. Like obviously you can push a new build on Git, but like what about when other things change? Most likely, what about when your content changes? So Sanity is got you covered on both of those fronts. Check it out at sanity.io/syntax. That is going to double your free usage tier than what you normally get. So check it out, sanity.io/syntax. They've got some pretty cool examples on that page as well. Thanks so much to Sanity for sponsoring.
Cool. All right, let's get into media a little bit. Let's talk about images. Now, I'm personally going to be reaching for Cloudinary myself because images are another thing that are very no fun to work with. And Cloudinary can really save you a ton of time generating the right images. They can also save your users a ton of bandwidth because you can serve up WebPs or WebMs or any of that fun stuff that Safari doesn't support yet for some reason. And yeah, that'd be a really great thing to do. But again, with just like any of these, the more that you host, the more you serve, the higher your costs are going to be. So it depends on how many images you're working with here.
Yeah.
So if you're working with a ton of images, you know, there is a decent way to roll your own Cloudinary via serverless functions and just open source packages and Amazon S3. That said, it's all time versus cost here. So how much time you're going to spend on that? If this is something you want to support and you want to do, you know, maybe you could just build your own serverless function and not have to pay those costs of having a company do it, but you will have to pay the time and effort of getting that thing set up.
Yeah, you know what I would do is I would spend a day and a half trying to make my own Cloudinary with a serverless function and see how far I get. Because you have to use this package called Sharp. And Sharp is a very low level package. That's not, it's not built in JavaScript, but you access it via JavaScript. Or maybe that's wrong. Maybe Sharp is the JavaScript package and it accesses things like PNG Quant and Moz JPEG and Image Optim, all of these things sort of under the hood. So I would give it a go, but you certainly can drop in Cloudinary. There's another one I learned about. I met at a conference, Image IX. I think I might have mentioned them before.
Oh, yeah.
So they do a similar thing to that as well. So I would certainly check that out. The pricing, $3 per 1,000 image, master images plus 8 cents per gig of bandwidth. So I don't know if that is good or not. I'd have to like run some calculations to be like, all right, I've got 500 listings that each have 20 photos, especially like Airbnb. You need nice big photos, right?
Yeah.
For that type of thing. So that's certainly something that can get real expensive real quick, but also it's something that could save you a ton of time.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of these things you got to run the numbers a little bit. And some of them you could just fire up and get going as like a proof of concept. And maybe that's the whole thing, right? Maybe you just need a proof of concept to gather some investment cash. And a proof of concept, you're not going to be having a ton of people using it. And therefore, something like Cloudinary would be good just to get up and running to be able to show this stuff off. It really depends on what the end result is. There's just so many different paths all of this can go, depending on what your ended goals are. If you're just trying to get this thing working as soon as possible, like Cloudinary all day.
Other things, like what are other things? I just kind of rattled a few things here. Handling cash, like I would reach for Stripe for sure.
But it depends on where your clients are. If everybody's USA and you don't need to support PayPal, then sure, Stripe. But like, if you got to support any of that stuff, then you have to go to Braintree or you have to roll your own.
Well, I would go for Stripe and PayPal. That's what I'm doing right now.
Stripe and PayPal. But what if you want to do reoccurring billing? Then you have to manage two separate reoccurring billing platforms.
Yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe Braintree would be better then.
There's always services like Recurly that handle reoccurring billing, but that's a whole thing if you need to do reoccurring billing, and they are going to take a much larger chunk. So it depends on what your backend skills are there. If you don't have a ton of great backend skills, then you're probably going to want to reach for one of these platforms that handles reoccurring billing. I run a reoccurring billing thing myself. It's not exactly a ton of fun. So if you don't want to manage a ton of that stuff, again, one of those services that you can pay a little bit more for is something like Recurly. That way you can do it through Stripe, Braintree, PayPal, all of those things, anything you'd want, and you don't even have to think about it. So just some food for thought there.
Other things, I guess, unsure of queuing. That's never something I've had to run into before. But if you have a lot of traffic or you're doing something that's fairly heavy, then you have to put things into a queue. Like if a user uploads 40 images of something, you probably want to throw that into a queue and have whatever it is you're using to compress them and convert them and resize them and crop them. You probably don't want to let the user sit there and wait for these things to all come back from an API. So that's probably one thing I would look into is queuing, but it's not anything I've done before. I'm not really sure how I would handle that.
I feel like there's just about 100 things that I've never done before that would probably come up the moment that you are at a critical impasse in this project.
That's how you learn, I guess. Anything else that we didn't cover here?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think this was fascinating to just think through maybe like what I would do today if I was picking up an application thing. That I would just want to use Svelte for everything. No, I would have a hard time resisting that. It's really good. I really like it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's might be like worth, I don't know, like picking up a big project like that, grabbing a brand new. I've certainly been burned in the past.
It's not that new. I mean, I guess Svelte 3 is new, but Svelte itself isn't. Yes.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've heard through problems with this, if you can't tell. It's a thing I wrestle with.
Yeah, I've run into all kinds of things. Anytime I'm building a course, I try to use something new. You run into these weird edge cases, like even like Gatsby. Gatsby images are so hard right now where you have to like write a GraphQL query and there's dynamic and static queries. Like that's an early pain point in Gatsby right now. And I guarantee you that will be fixed because it's silly how hard it is right now.
You should see how Gridsome does it.
Really?
Gridsome is like total turnkey for that. It's like, oh, just pass an image to this component and don't ever think about it again. Yeah.
It's how it should work. Yeah, exactly. Like there should be a way to dynamically do that, but there currently isn't a really good solution for it. So yeah, that hopefully that is helpful to you. Seeing how you would tackle it. It's pretty bang on how we currently do our own platforms, but that's because we're both kind of sort of constantly tweaking and changing our own platforms, how they work. Let's jump into some sick picks now. I am going to sick pick a YouTube channel called Bon Appetit. Bon Appetit is obviously the magazine. It's been around forever, but they've just been running a YouTube channel for a number of years now. And I think that they've absolutely nailed it on YouTube. So they make these cooking videos that are approachable, but they're really funny. And then they have all these different personalities that do different types of videos. So there's this guy, Brad, does a lot of like fermentation and like kombucha and all these kind of interesting things. And there's someone else that Claire, she tries to replicate like Twizzlers and M&Ms, and she tries to like remake things in the kitchen just with her own skills, which are really cool. And then they're always filming in this kitchen where there's just like hilarious people running around in the background. And it sort of throws out the like high quality video chefs things that you often see, and just takes a totally different approach at it. And it's funny because my wife and I stopped watching like MasterChef and started watching this on YouTube at night. So it's that good that it's totally moved our TV viewing habits over to this YouTube. So check it out. Bon Appetit on YouTube.
I gotta check that out. Yeah. We've been watching the Great British Baking Show or Great British, whatever it is. I mean, we've been watching that forever, but the new season's out on Netflix right now. Oh, my favorite cooking show. My sick pick is going to be the K-Safe. We're going to talk about this in the next episode. But this K-Safe thing is this kitchen safe. And what this does is it locks anything inside of a safe for a given amount of time, upwards or under 7 days, I think it is. So you can put something in here, like let's say cookies, and you can say, well, I have a cookie eating problem, so I'm going to lock these cookies in here, and I'm going to click it and says I can't have these cookies for like 4 or 5 days. And then the thing automatically unlocks after that time. I found this to be incredible. They say this is really good for just enforcing accountability for things that you're trying to change. Our episode on Monday that's coming out is all going to be on habits. So we're going to talk a little bit about this, but I've been throwing my phone inside of a K-Safe so that I can't use it when I want to just mindlessly pick it up. Or it's a good idea maybe for those of you who have kids, maybe you want to say, okay, device time's over, and you can show everybody, mom and dad, everybody, we're all putting our phones in here, whatever, and lock them up. And yeah, you can't open this thing until the time limit is up. So obviously don't set it for something they need to get open. Otherwise, you're going to be breaking your expensive little K-Safe here. But I've been loving mine. It's super cool, really nicely made, and a really interesting little, I guess you'd call it a gadget. It's not really a gadget, but really, really cool thing.
Awesome. Let's talk about shameless plugs. I'm going to pick one of my older but extremely relevant courses, and that is my Flexbox.io course. So even though Grid is out, you still need to know Flexbox for a whole bunch of use cases. It's funny, I tweeted this thing the other day, which is I ordered every CSS color name by the length of the name. And then I ordered them by hue and then by saturation, then by lightness. And then I ordered them by all three. And it was kind of a fun thing to do on the internet. And everybody was like, nice. Did you do that with grid? And I was like, it's not possible in grid. You have to use Flexbox for that. So they obviously aren't. This still is a lot of use case for Flexbox. And if you want to learn it, check out flexbox.io.
Cool. I have a new course coming this month on Svelte. Like I mentioned, I'm absolutely loving it. In this course, we build a quiz. The quiz is using a free open API. So in this course, you not only learn the basics of Svelte itself, but all the kind of stuff that you'd need to do in a normal app, from working with scoped CSS, to working with animations, to working with APIs. And it's really cool. I think you're gonna get halfway through this course and you're gonna be like, I cannot believe what we're able to accomplish with such little code. I'm writing like very little code here, and we're able to just make a really, really functional quiz app in absolutely no time at all. It's really super fantastic. So if you want to learn any of those things, head on over to leveluptutorials.com/pro. That is leveluptutorials.com/pro. Sign up for the year and save 25%. Thank you so much. And we will see you next week, where we talk about building habits on Monday. And who knows, we might be kicking off our spooky October web dev stuff very soon here.
Yeah, that's not next week, but it will be soon.
No, it's not next week. I'm saying very soon. It's very soon.
We're collecting all these developer horror stories, which I was reading them to Caitlin, my wife, and I was just dying. Get ready for it. We should say, in preparation for Halloween, if you have a horror story of a developer, so I'm talking deleting a database, accidentally pushing a bug to production that ordered toilet paper to everybody's house, screaming into your microphone, writing swear words and pushing into production, all of these hilarious things. If you have one, tweet us or email us or send it to us any way you want. Most of the good ones are coming in via email. I'm Wes at WesBoss.com. Because they want to remain anonymous. So please send those over. We're going to do an entire show of these spooky horror stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. Well, we will see you next one.
Peace.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.